The Deep Field.
Hi, I'm Cole Chakey, and welcome to part one of Sky Sounds, a three-part series where we invite you to tune in and listen up. We have three stories for you in this series, all about Calgarians who've fallen into intimate relationships with the sounds above and around them. Sky Sounds has been commissioned by Calgary's Arts Commons and will be played through the Plus 15 walkway throughout the summer. We're going to start downtown with our first story. Any Calgarian who has spent any time downtown has heard the carillon, the bells in the Calgary Tower that chime out the hour and plays a selection of music to entertain Calgarians during their walk to and from work and on their noon hour break. It's our city's largest instrument, and composing for it is an epic call to musical arms. In this part one of Sky Sounds, you'll hear from local musical innovator Kenna Barima. Her work, Rico's Requiem, that you're hearing now, was piped through the carillon for the first time in January and has been ringing out every noon hour since. So should we get started?
Yes, let's do it.
Nice. Yeah, so I want to talk about Requiem.
Yeah.
And the carillon.
Cool.
So why don't you tell me how this project came to you?
Well, it was a project that had been in existence, unbeknownst to me, certainly, for about 4 years. It was a collaboration between Downtown Calgary Association and the High Performance Rodeo. And I don't know whose idea was it originally. I would probably be right in saying that it was probably Michael Green who came up with the idea. But either way, the concept of it was to bring in various musicians, composers, and when I say musicians, I mean specifically keyboard musicians, to either compose or perform songs on the carillon, which is housed in the Calgary Tower, and whatever playlist or piece they composed would be played throughout the month of January during the High Performance Rodeo. The cool thing about that, though, is that there's only one or two people in Calgary who actually know how to program the carillon, one of them being Neil Coburn, who was the featured performer last year, which means that in actual fact, whoever's piece it is, whatever year, it's played every weekday noon hour for the entire year, which is kind of an added bonus because I was just downtown yesterday and heard it at noon. So what happened was Michael Green contacted me in the summer of 2014 and said, I have this idea. What do you think? And of course, I jumped at the opportunity, and particularly because it seems so odd to me that even though I've lived in Calgary since 96, so however many years that is, I had no idea what was actually the bells that I heard coming out of the Calgary Tower. So once I started doing a little bit of research and realizing what actually was involved, the piece sort of, it really wrote itself from there on.
So what was involved? Like, what did you discover about the carillon?
A lot of us who may be listening would be familiar with the term Glockenspiel. And that's the German equivalent of the French term carillon. And really, the original carillon, whenever you would be in a church that would have a belfry where you would hear actual bells, that is the carillon. And the carillon is really either a small or large series of bells. And the bells can be struck by a lever that is usually operated by a manual keyboard. So as a keyboardist myself, it was something that wasn't necessarily foreign to me, but the concept of playing 23 bells, it really actually, if it had been a physical instrument, an acoustic instrument rather than the digital instrument, which is housed in the Calgary Tower, I would literally have been playing the heaviest instrument in the entire world. And of course, I got a big kick out of that. So the carillon itself, the one that's housed in the Calgary Tower, is a Dutch instrument. It's a digital one, which means that it has a manual keyboard which you play, but it has a bunch of banks where it has different sort of sounds associated with what a carillon could actually sound like. And the carillon is a challenge, certainly. I found it to be a challenge initially to write for, but once you were aware, once I was aware of its challenges, it actually simplified things a lot. And when I say the challenge, the main challenge is that when you strike a bell has a series of overtones, and that's different frequencies or pitches that you would hear in addition to the main note. So say I struck a C bell, and no one would just hear just a C note. They'd hear all these different other notes and harmonies very closely associated, overtones. And the carillon and the nature of a bell, for some reason, and I wonder what the science is behind it, but very specifically, there is an interval of a minor third, which means that every bell that you strike or whatever note you play on the carillon has a minor third already built into it. So that means that it's actually a very rich and dense harmony by just playing a single note, which meant that when you write for the carillon, and there are, you know, there is a repertoire that I looked at, and definitely when I wrote for the Requiem that I composed, I had to keep that in mind. It couldn't be fast. It couldn't be huge, massive chords, which are the two things that I, you know, prone to write usually. So I really had to step back and simplify every part of the composition process for myself. And I mean, I think, you know, you talk to any artist of any art or practice, having a challenge or a restriction in some way is really a wonderful opportunity, you know, and it's not, I mean, I guess it's a little bit cliched, but it's so true that having some sort of thing that you have to overcome means that you have to think about what you do differently, and certainly that's what ended up happening for sure.
So that those are the kind of technical starting places. What was the artistic starting place for the composition?
The experience and the performance and everything wrapped up with writing Rico's Requiem for the Calgary Tower, for the carillon of the Calgary Tower, changed me as an artist. Changed me as a person, changed me as an artist, and in very significant ways, because it became to represent a number of events that happened in my life. So Michael Green had contacted me in the summer. It was in September that my father passed away unexpectedly. A mere couple weeks after that, Richard McDowell, who was the sound designer and resident composer for One Yellow Rabbit, passed away unexpectedly. And when it came time to start writing for the carillon, I was in Banff at a residency and had, you know, a fair bit of time to start conceiving of something. I just kept on coming back to this idea that there had to be a way, certainly in light of Rico's, Richard's passing, that I could somehow pay musical homage to the musical brains behind One Yellow Rabbit for so many years. And I myself had always been very fascinated with and almost obsessed with Mozart's Requiem. And there are many, many Requiems I had discovered and discovered even more as I started writing the piece. And so I decided to take the opportunity, because really I had an hour. The concept was that the piece was to be played over a full hour. So the idea of or the format of a requiem just you know, it just made so much sense. When I got back to Calgary, I got access to the archives. One Yellow Rabbit, thankfully, I'm sure it was Rico who thought of it, to archive if not all, definitely a lot of the soundscapes and particular songs and pieces that he wrote to accompany and be a part of ensemble productions. And generally there was an ensemble production a year, so it stretched back into the early 80s. And so I sat with the archive and transcribed everything. Just sat down, listened, and note for note, with a pencil and lined manuscript paper, transcribed pages and pages and pages and pages of Rico's material.
How would you describe Rico's composition style, or how would you describe this bulk of songs?
Well, that's what became so, I'm definitely one who does not believe in coincidences. I believe that I'm a little bit of a new agey type person when it comes to the concept that I believe that things happen for a reason, and that sometimes, especially in my life, I feel that things are placed in my life to be able to either learn from it or grow with it. When I talked about the carillon, stepping back a second, I talked about how things had to be simple, right? The very simple lines of music need to be performed for the carillon. And what I found was that Rico's music was that. Even though there was lots of these, sort of what you would call synth pads and textures, the actual melodic and harmonic content, because of the nature of him being, I think he was a bass player and self-taught, he wrote... he had a very specific style, and that was that he would have a sort of very strong melodic idea, sort of above a really sort of weird, quirky, groovy bass line. So generally speaking, he had always two lines going at the same time, which meant that it made thankfully transcribing quite simple for myself, but it also meant that the material that he was presenting to me in a way was already absolutely perfect for the carillon. It was a very powerful realization, and at the same time that I was writing it, I was still in the reeling and dealing with the grief of the death of my own father. This Requiem was a very powerful experience for me to be able to process death of a friend of my father, and really come to terms with what it even actually meant. And so what started happening is I would take little snippets of Rico's material, and I made sure to name everything or title everything what ensemble, like he had a title for each little piece, and then what production it came from. So I made sure to track that. And then what I also started doing was acquiring and listening to as many different requiems as I could. And there's been requiems written way back into the 1500s. And for those of you that aren't familiar with what a requiem is, it's the Catholic mass that is to accompany a soul as it passes on up to heaven or hell, I suppose. It meant that there's this huge repertoire of requiems written from the 1500s, 1400s, all the way into present day. And so I found as many as I could. Of course, I mined a lot of Mozart's Requiem because I knew the Requiem already and had sang the Requiem in choirs, and started taking snippets of various requiems from different composers and from all around the world. And then also started weaving in my own, either passages or notes or harmony. So there really was, for each part of the Requiem, there's many parts to it. There's 12 in total. Each Requiem has a different composer, but also has me and Rico. So it's kind of like this triptych sort of trio that that exists in each part of the Requiem. So it became this really mammoth work, but it wrote itself. I had wonderful material from the best of the best composers throughout, the 500, 600 years of Western music, and this quirky, weird stuff of Rico's, and it all just unfolded in this really magical way. And I think I wrote it in like 10 days or something. I just sat down and just went for it. And what you hear at noon on a weekday, if you're downtown, is really like a first or second draft. Like there's some little tweaks that I did and changed some things, because of course I compose it on the piano at home, and then would go to the Calgary Tower, and there's this button that you can press where on the carillon where it's inside bells or outside bells. Inside bells is just this little speaker. that sits right beside the two manual keyboard in the main lobby downstairs at the tower. Or you can press this button outside Bell's, which are the huge, massive speaker systems that exist to throw the sound of the bells out to most of downtown. And I gotta say, there were a number of times I'm like, all I have to do is press this button. But yeah, I mean, I didn't really realize what a, you know, it was just something that I had been asked to do by Michael. And you know, it was, as any artist, you just sort of do it. And then you don't really realize what a big deal it is until you are presenting it to an audience, which we did on the 6th. And I remember presenting it to a room full of people and many of the OYR staff and ensemble, and realizing how an emotionally intense experience it was for a lot of people who recognized so many of the snippets of Rico's music, who recognized many of the snippets of various requiems, and for myself being able to weave in my own ideas into that as well. Yeah, I was glad I got through it, but it was an intense musical experience for sure.
We're just wondering to ask you a question. We're doing a podcast sound installation project, and one of the stories is on the composition that's playing in the Carillon right now. We just wondered if you've, since it's been running this month, if you've had any feedback about it, or if anyone's asked about it or mentioned it at all.
We haven't had any. I think we got like a tweet in the first couple days about someone who had enjoyed it, but I haven't seen much feedback coming in to, because I look over our info account, email and whatnot. We haven't gotten very much yet, mm-hmm. which is probably a good thing, because usually we get like, we used to get a lot of complaints, and we found that since we put new music in there, they're starting to get less and less.
Yeah.
Along with the fact that people from the area are just used to it.
Yeah. What kind of complaints would you get?
Just people who generally, a lot of people who are new to the area didn't appreciate like the chimes, the regular chiming, that we had to explain that, you know, it's kind of been part of the downtown for 30 plus years.
It's right. Interesting. Okay. Thanks so much. That's great. I've seen people on unicycles before, but never such a well-dressed person riding a unicycle. The instrument that's at the top of the Calgary Tower, the Carillon. And I'm just wondering if you would give it a listen for a few seconds and tell me if you've really noticed the sound before or what you think of it.
So I always notice it and I always like it.
Yeah. Have you noticed a difference between the kind of mood of this one playing than what is usually being played?
No, I haven't. But I noticed that the high performance rodeo, that they changed it up a bit. I did know that.
Yeah. No. So I've talked to people who never really kind of notice it or clock it at all. What is it about it that has caught your ear?
Well, it just reminds me of Europe, that's all. Because if you go to Europe, there's always church bells, or usually church bells. And just reminds me of being in Europe, and sometimes it sounds like Christmas carols, and I like that.
Yeah.
Adds some atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Well, lovely. Thanks. Thanks for sharing some time.
Calgary Tower bells is that you're, you know, walking around downtown and you always hear something, but you don't actually realize what you're hearing until you stop and actually listen to it. And so I think that there is that idea that that something can be background noise, which is, I think, many times what can happen with the Carillon when it plays music that people don't have a emotional connection to. And certainly there are lots of playlists that are utilized by the Carillon and by the Calgary Tower that are Lutheran hymns, patriotic songs from the 50s, music that really just doesn't necessarily speak to our multicultural cosmopolitan city. And so once people, I think, realize that, oh, in actual fact, during the noon hour on weekdays, because it was Tona Omaha before me, that to actually have originally composed music being played or being, you know, performed on a carillon that is completely unlike the usual sort of stuff that you hear on the bells, people seem to stop and take notice. And certainly, again, I was really aware of the fact that I'd heard from people who work downtown. A friend of mine works at the Glenbow and had commented in the past how when when there'd be music played on the carillon over and over and over again, it would just get to the point where you just had to shut it off. It became like Muzak. And so to hear people say that in actual fact it's not when they hear that carillon, it means a lot to me for sure. And I mean, I think the other thing that was intense was someone said when I was performing it for the first time, they were like, "Well, this is you're performing for the entire downtown, which is thousands of people, and that's certainly by far the largest audience I've had in a long time." So, when asked, as you have asked me, I certainly do appreciate and think that music, the Rico's Requiem, is now a part of the Calgary landscape in a really tangible way. And to be a part of that, and to be a part of the history of the Calgary Tower, because the Calgary Tower is, it's an iconic sort of landmark in Calgary, and to be able to bring that history of One Yellow Rabbit into that tower, and be the person that had the opportunity to do that, I'm certainly aware of what a big deal it is. But it was an amazing experience. It was really powerful.
I imagine something that folks that work in public art a lot experience all the time, you know, that like not knowing how many people, like you have a sense statistically of how many people pass your work or hear your work, but that intangible quality of how many people pay attention to it, you know. And I think public art's one of those things that people can become inured to it, but also if it went away, then the hole it would leave would be really obvious.
Well, I guess that's what happened when the Calgary Tower went under renovations and reconstruction in the 80s. They took the carillon out just because they had to, and then just didn't put it back in. And people got pissed. I don't know how much of an uproar there was, but there was enough of an uproar that they had put the thing back in. Because when they first built the Calgary Tower in the 70s, the carillon was donated by the Dutch Association. So it was there. And then when they took it out, people noticed.
If you could like DJ the carillon, if you could be the like programmer in residence or something, how would you use the carillon to its you know most rad extent?
Well, I'm so glad you asked that because it was weeks. It had to have been weeks, maybe a month. Before Michael Green suddenly passed away, and I'd sent him this email. And my subject was, "I have an idea. I have this idea." And that was how Michael always communicated with me. He would, and I'm sure this is how he communicated, I mentioned this at his memorial, he communicated like that to a lot of people. That he would have this idea, be really excited, and then convince everyone around him that they were going to be a part of it and we were going to do it. And it could be a good idea, it could be a bad idea. Regardless, it happened. There was the risk of it. And so my last email interaction with Michael had been that I'd sent this email saying, "I have this idea," and he responded, the last email I got from him was, "Let's do it, what's the next step?" And that was the last email that I ever received from him. And the idea was, that because it's 30 years for the High Performance Rodeo next year, for 2016, I thought, you know, it's high time that the Carillon of the Calgary Tower, that its playlist, that its main playlist, and the music that it plays is music of Calgarians. You know, because in a way I feel it's inappropriate that there are Lutheran hymns being performed. You know, like, there's just so many cultures in Calgary now. We are truly a multicultural city. And if the Calgary Tower is a representation of Calgary, the music that is performed and played from that tower should be a reflection of Calgary culture. So I said, what if we did a project where we collected as many songs by Calgarians, whatever genre it is, as many genres as we could cover, and picked, curated, and then through probably a voting process, picked the best 30 songs from the last 30 years that the High Performance Rodeo was in existence, transcribed them in the same sort of way that I did Rico's work, and then have that be the main playlist for the Calgary Towers. The music of Calgarians from, you know, from all the way back into the 80s, all the way till present day, and it'd be songs of Calgarians. And so, just to give you a snippet on when you'll be airing this, but that project is moving ahead. We've all agreed that that's a great idea, and that's what we're going to do. So, I'm not quite sure how we're going to go about it yet. I'm pretty sure that I'm definitely going to have to bring more like-minded souls into the process, because it's going to be a massive undertaking. I already have a few people in mind who have acted as archivists of Calgary music and the Calgary music scene throughout the years. So definitely get them involved. But I like the idea, because I think that, you know, that there's this idea that we want to celebrate what has happened in Calgary for the last 30 years, and a lot. I mean, I've only lived here since 96, but Calgary is definitely my home and will be for, you know, the foreseeable future. So to be able to bring its maybe more underground culture, the music of Calgary, into sort of the downtown corporate world via the Carillon of the Calgary Tower, to me, it makes a lot of sense. I think bands would get a real kick out of it. Like, I would just love to hear, I don't know, Wagbeard or The Strait, or like any of these bands that I kind of missed out on, or even bands that I know now. Forbidden Dimension, Napalm Palm, Cowpuncher, like, you know, whatever kind of band, whatever kind of genre. It can be done in a way and simplified in a way so that the essence, you know, the melody and the bass notes can create, I think, some really cool Carillon pieces that, you know, maybe will be played on the Carillon for 30 years to come.
Like you mentioned, so I saw you perform in January, and then the last time I saw you perform was an organ version at Michael Green's memorial. Mm-hmm. So first, I guess maybe for folks listening who didn't know Michael, could you tell me who Michael was and your relationship with him?
I certainly was introduced to Michael Green via going to High Performance Rodeo shows, and you know, those in Calgary can are probably either aware of High Performance Rodeo a little bit. It's a performance art multidisciplinary festival that happens every January, produced by One Yellow Rabbit, who is the company that puts on the High Performance Rodeo. They are also an ensemble of performance artists who create works to be put on generally during the High Performance Rodeo. And Michael Green had been a founder of One Yellow Rabbit. And so when they decided to start the High Performance Rodeo, the idea was that Michael Green and Blake would be co-artistic directors. And so it would probably be about 8-10 years ago, I was approached by One Yellow Rabbit to collaborate with them on animating and producing performances and shows to happen in the center court of what we now call the Arts Commons. And that was to be known as the Midway. And then also a side project of it was the Grandstand, which was in the Big Secret Theater. I worked closely with Michael as well as the rest of the Rabbits, and it was really an amazing experience to, you know, because I'd just gotten out of music school. To be able to be a part of something very different, very weird, and very outside my usual comfort zone. Really, the growth that I received and the experience and the knowledge that I got from doing that was amazing. And I think, you know, I just sort of took that as my starting point and just always followed Michael's lead of taking risks. And that if there's anything that I learned from him as a curator and as a performer and later as a sort of cultural activist, is that you have to take risks. You have to. It's for me, it's my responsibility as an artist and in everything that I do, that the final outcome, the success of the final outcome, should have absolutely no bearing on the actual creation of the art itself. And I can't say that's how it should be for everyone, but for me, that's what taking risks mean. And as an artist, in everything that I do when I walk on stage, that I am conscious of knowing that I'm walking on stage and I'm like, I'm going to open myself up here and it's going to probably be messy and dirty and emotional, but That's where the art is, I guess.
Sorry to bug you. I'm just wondering if I could ask you a question. I'm doing a podcast about it's called the carillon, the instrument that's played in the Calgary Tower.
Yeah, go ahead, sure.
So I've just been asking people if before I asked you, had you noticed the music?
I was just thinking about that, actually.
Yeah, what were you thinking?
Oh, it's the second day that I came out here, and we're just taking a course here, and I noticed it, and I actually was just thinking before you walked over, oh, it's kind of nice.
Yeah.
It is, yeah, so.
Yeah, what do you think of the tune that's playing?
It's mellow. It's got that certain tone.
Yeah.
Like, not aggressive, which is nice.
Yeah.
Nice for downtown setting, right?
Are you usually downtown?
No, I'm from Fox Creek, actually.
Oh, where's Fox Creek?
Alberta, northern.
Oh, great.
Way up there, like 6 hours or more away.
Yeah.
So.
It seems like a lot of folks I've talked to who are downtown all the time don't even clock it.
Oh,
like,
really?
They don't even really hear it. But so maybe it's your fresh airs that caught it.
No, I've been to a lot of cities, and, you know, you actually, like, in Europe, you do actually have the church bells. That's what it actually reminded me of right away. And so, I was actually looking around, and there's no old buildings here, really. No old churches, so that's what
kind of,
yeah, interesting.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Hey, I'm sorry, but I'm just wondering if I could ask you a quick question. I'm making a podcast about the instrument that plays at the top of the Calgary Tower.
Okay.
I'm just wondering, while you've been sitting here, if you've been noticing the music or the chimes that have been playing?
I definitely heard it, but I don't really know if that's a specific song or melody or anything like that.
Yeah. And it's okay if you had, like, most people I chat with haven't paid a lot of attention to it, but is it something that you had kind of clocked, or was it just part of the noise of sitting here?
I did try to figure out if it's tied to a specific time, but I was looking at my watch and it wasn't, so I'm not really sure.
Like a bell tower, like dinging on the hour or the half hour.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, it's a song, essentially. It's like an hour long or so, or 45 minute or long, so like full composition. Yeah. Would you be able to say, like, what the kind of mood of the song is, what kind of song it seems like?
I'm just thinking about that. It sounds almost ominous, and I'm really sorry, but I need to catch that bus.
No, thanks so much. I appreciate your time.
No problem. Thank you.
I just want to jump back to something I've been thinking about. When you sat down and start transcribing Rico's archive, how, like, do you have a sense of how many hours of music of his that you listen to?
I would say, I bet it would be between 10 and 15 hours of music. Those archives weren't even complete, you know? It had been so soon after Rico's passing, and Rico was also the sort of the de facto, well, not even the de facto, he was the IT guy for them as well. So he had just massive hard drives of stuff.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of stuff that didn't make it onto the archives yet. And I felt, okay, I just got to keep things simple. I'm just going to use the stuff that's available to me. You know, and also at the time that he passed, the ensemble was working on What the Thunder Said. So he had really new stuff that he'd been working on that day before his heart attack. And so, you know, so I think probably the 10 to 15 hours is just like a tiny sliver of his material. And what was really neat is there would be things that would be named Groove 1 that would then show up in the archive years later as a very specific piece, like Gilgamesh fight scene or something. So it was really interesting to see, not in any kind of linear or chronological way, the conception or probably early idea of something and then see it placed and housed in an actual production. It was also very similar to how I write. I a lot of times I just sort of puke stuff out and hope that something will catch, and a lot of times it doesn't, you know. I have pages and pages of what I conceive of as crap, and then I'll be writing a song years later and be like, oh hey, that actually could work. And then being able to, you know, not slap on maybe, but apply a little kernel of maybe what I'd conceived years ago and bring it into the present, and it actually then makes sense. And to me, that non-linear, non-chronological way of creation is very interesting to me. You know, the concept that time isn't linear. So why is it that I composed or thought of something so many years ago that now works in the present? Does that mean that the past and present actually in some weird way actually overlap in moments? You know, we're told that time isn't linear, that humans can only conceive of time in a linear fashion. So that's, to me, where art becomes that amazing doorway into questioning how things are sort of set up so that we can conceive them or we can understand them. That it's constantly, their creative process and the artistic process gives us this ability to constantly be questioning of the questioning what if.
How did the artistic practice of composing affect how you were able to process the loss of these really important people in your life?
That's a tough one to answer because of what I don't, there's a part of music that I don't understand. And even though, you know, I've been playing for what I guess will be 30 years playing music and being a musician in the way that I, you know, even as a small child, when my mom bought my piano and I started taking lessons, I was like, I was in it, you know, that was something that I loved so much. I have a very emotional reaction to music. I cry in the car all the time. You know, if something comes on CBC or something comes on my iPod or iPhone where I, you know, and I'm listening to it, like, I don't even understand how music can elicit and bring up emotions. And I only say that in the way that, you know, I'm sure that there are so many aspects and concepts that go into why we have this emotional connection to music. And I mean, we all are, I guess, just matter that's vibrating at a certain frequency, and that's what music is a vibration. And so at some point, the interlocking or the overlapping of music and vibration of music and the vibration of our beings, that something then chemically happens and creates this emotion. But all I can say is, just by the aspect of bringing up all these emotions, you know, that aren't really all that comfortable to experience, you know, grief and guilt and, you know, sadness, which is actually different from grief, and anger. And music kind of, for me, I found while I was doing this, that I couldn't escape these emotions. I couldn't escape the thoughts of and these feelings. And so I just had to write through them. And I hear this, and when I hear other musicians and other artists, how they use their work to process the death of either someone they loved, or you see quite often the death of a relationship, which is, you know, death as well. That you end up just being you just end up being confronted with things and emotions and not really given a choice but to come out the other side. I feel that, you know, there, and I've heard this from so many people that have experienced death close to them, and is that you just, it gets easier, but it doesn't necessarily ever leave. Like, you never go back to normal, you know, or whatever that normal is. And, you know, certainly if I've learned anything about this, you know, the artistic process that I went through, as well as this experience of dealing with death, is that if there's any experience that humans have that we can all share, is the fact that we die and that those around us die. And to me, that's got to be the most important lesson that any of us can deal with. And so to be able to do it through music means that... It can be an outlet that allows me to get on with life, because I can see how people can get caught.
Yeah, and it seems like the Carillon is a pretty, like, you're not just releasing it, you're cathartically blasting it
exactly.
Across the city
in
the, you know, with the city's biggest instrument.
Yeah, it was, again, like you say that, I'm like, oh my God, that's right. You know, I just don't even conceive of those sort of grandiose ideas, but that's pretty much what happened for sure. Yeah. It's funny talking about that stuff, because having a little bit of distance from it now, you know, it's been playing for, so 3 months, you know, 3 months away from it. To sort of revisit and you know, the questions that you ask, sort of rethink about it and be like, you know, to have that kind of space from it, it's, when you're in it, I mean, I'm sure it happens with you, when you're in a process and you're in it, you don't really think about all the other stuff. You're just doing it, you're in it. But when you're finished with it and you start looking back, you know.
Yeah, it's a chance for a bit of perspective. Thank you to Kennebrewima for sharing her music and thoughts with us. And thanks, too, to Alberta Theatre Projects for the recording help, and to Arts Commons for commissioning Sky Sounds. And also thanks to the High Performance Rodeo and the Calgary Tower, who originally commissioned Kenna's work. And a special thanks to Michael Green and Rico McDowell for their continued and lasting inspiration. The Deep Field is produced by myself, Cole Chakey, Anton DeGroot, and Laurel Green. You can find this and all past episodes of The Deep Field on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spiderweb Sound. And you can get in touch with us through our Facebook page, facebook.com/deepfield, or on Twitter. Up next on our Sky Sound series, we investigate a pervasive and elusive hum that's been plaguing a Calgary community for years. And we talk to the residents and researchers who've been hunting for its cause. In the meantime, if you're in Calgary and find yourself downtown, you can hear Kenna's music in the Calgary sky every day at noon. Thanks again for listening. Till soon.